yoke isn't hard. I'll give you everything you need to do. The words that I have written on your heart.
Thanks. Hello, welcome. I have a friend joining me today. His name is Kevin. Kevin, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and maybe, I don't know, how we met?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Kevin Shalerith. I am a full-time touring musician. I've been traveling the country with my wife and kids for the last 15 years, playing mostly house concerts, 250 nights or so a year. And yeah, we met at AudioFeed, a music festival that I helped to put together in Urbana, Illinois, around the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah. Me and the family were wandering the country this summer. We were aiming at doing mostly like book fest, you know, but that's not real common for Christian sci-fi and fantasy. So we filled in with AudioFeed. My original exposure to AudioFeed was a band I like called My Epic, which I understand you know them well, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know them, but I just would hear them talk about AudioFeed occasionally, you know, in their online stuff. So I was like, we'll go and we'll see My Epic, because they've been there a few times, I thought.
Yeah.
And we came, and they weren't there this year, but it was, we got introduced to so many different artists that were just super cool and met new friends. I was thinking last night, I guess we'll tell everybody what we did last night, but last night we're sitting there in my living room with you, and I was thinking, man, how weird. We met in Illinois. That was in Illinois,
yeah.
Right? We met in Illinois, and here you are in my house, you know,
yeah.
A few months later. So what is AudioFeed? Like, what? Tell folks about that. What is that about?
AudioFeed is interesting. It's a four-day art and music festival. We normally have 90-plus bands, another maybe 15 or 20 speakers, and about 15 artists, visual artists presenting their work. And our hope for AudioFeed is to sort of set the table for conversation around Jesus with kind of a wide audience. So we are unique in this sort of Christian-ish music world, in that I think our hopeful audience at AudioFeed includes people that are maybe fall all across the spectrum of specifics of belief around Jesus, and then even folks that are sort of would consider themselves ex-Christian or ex-evangelical or whatever. So yeah, our hope is just to facilitate like a good-natured conversation with people that maybe don't see eye to eye on some of these things, and
yeah.
Let the music be kind of a starting point for those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our experience was, you know, coming up there, obviously we'd never been, we didn't know what to expect. We showed up with our kids and weren't even sure, do other people do that? I actually sent a message to the former bass player of My Epic, because I'd seen him online. I said, you guys did AudioFeed. Is it safe for the family? He's like, oh yeah, totally. And so on his, you know, on his word, we booked
yes.
it and we came, and we were really surprised. I mean, like almost immediately we felt totally comfortable just letting the kids kind of wander, because there were lots of kids there. There was an entire section that you guys had set up that was for kids, and there was programming for kids specifically, you know, and my kids loved that. Although I will say, my kids also really loved the heavy metal tent. They would put on the earmuffs, because they hadn't seen that live before, and any music they'd seen live was actually, you know, pretty folk oriented, you know. So they would go in that tent, and they I remember Eli, my second, came to me at one point and said, there's grown men in there dancing and jumping and swinging. And I was like, yeah, just don't get punched in the face and, you know, have fun. It was just a really cool experience. And so it's interesting, like you said, it's inviting for ex-Christians or people that have kind of come out of the faith. Our experience, though, was that doesn't mean it's unsafe for
absolutely.
The family. And
so
talk about the speakers, because that's something you wouldn't get at a standard music festival that's not faith-related or faith-adjacent.
Sure.
Like, what are the speakers doing? What's going on with
that? Yeah, I mean, we cover a lot of different topics. Different years, there's been maybe more focused themes for the speaking, but a lot of times it's just sort of inviting people to come and share something interesting that that they're thinking about. And so this year we, for instance, had the singer from Agi, Chris. He gave a talk about sort of this concept of maps in terms of like the grand story of things and our understanding one another. And so very kind of academic ethereal. But then there also might be someone like talking about, oh, like, is it still relevant to read Chesterton at this time? You know, like, so it kind of, it's interesting how all over the place it is. Sometimes it'll be like a pretty specific theological kind of topic, and other times it will be more, we kind of find that we're a place for the weird people a little bit. And so, like a theology of monsters and stuff like that. You might get something like that at Audio Feed. But yeah, I'm glad that you noticed the family stuff. That's like, I think that's the thing that also like makes the table kind of concept work for Audio Feed, of like in this idea that people find it worth trying to stick together, trying to keep dialogue open. Like that's something we sometimes experience in a family, right? That we are, okay, maybe my crazy uncle thinks all sorts of weird stuff, and but I love him, and so I like want to hear him out. And I think that that kind of concept makes it really natural for us to be a great place for families, because we sort of see the community as a whole as a family. And it's been cool. Like, we're a small festival. There's probably like 500 or so like paid admittance. And I think we served 130 kids in the, in the kids programming area this year. So it's awesome. Becky, who runs that, is so cool. She's been super into music. Like, I feel like, I don't know if I might be wrong about this. So I want to say like Maddie Montgomery from For Today was like her, like kids, like, godfather or something, you know, like, so they've been in the music world forever. And then, but she's a great teacher and, yeah, does a great job with the kids. So yeah, it is a place where it's fun watching the kind of, feral child army just roaming around the fairgrounds. But yeah, it's great. I have, you know, a lot of jobs at Audio Feed, and my children, my 8 and 6 year old, like, I'm thankful that they can kind of, move about the place and we feel relatively good about it.
I like the feral, what did you say? Feral child army. Just to be clear, that wasn't a metal band that was there. That was actually
the children.
But it was kind of true. They kind of moved in. They kind of moved in mass, and then there would be, actually, the tent. You guys had a tent there. There was a seminary, and they did some programming for kids too, which was cool.
Yeah, that seminary is super cool. It's very small, and they have classes similar to our speakers, where it will be like this kind of. What does it look like to read murder mystery as a Christian genre? Stuff like that.
You know, so another thing that happened to us as we were leading up to coming this summer, so My Epic was coming through Dallas, and I went to that show, I don't know, it was probably maybe 5 months before Audio Feed, 6 months. And it was just a little venue, but there was a guy there with a camera. And he was, I got to talking to older guy,
Chad,
maybe in his, that's him, his name is Chad. Got to talking to him and realized that he's been a long-term fixture of both Cornerstone, which preceded, but like he pulled up his sleeve and he had the armband from Cornerstone, I think it was Cornerstone, I think it was Audio Feed, like tattooed around his arm. And so started talking to him and realized that out of all these people, all of which probably had never been, I found this one guy who not only goes, but has a, like when we got there, I found him in there's like a little RV circle where he and some other guys, always park.
Camp 51.
51? Yeah, it was like is that like Area 51 alien thing or something?
It comes from, they would kind of say, see you in 51 weeks.
That's what it was. Okay.
But then they did lean into the alien imagery for a while and their decorations. But this, I want to say this past year was their 25th year camping together as a group between the two festivals.
So after Corner, which a lot of people have heard of Cornerstone probably. Yeah. So would you say, and I never got to go to Cornerstone, would you say Audiofeed is like a small version of Cornerstone, or is it so different?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely so different. It's one way to think about it is maybe as Cornerstone fan fiction. Essentially, like, Cornerstone was ending in, what was it, 2012, and that was also the time of Occupy Wall Street was like the internet thing. And so there was an Occupy Cornerstone like Facebook group, and people were like, we're just gonna go to the, you know, to the farm and we're going anyway. And the Jesus people are like, please don't do that, we sold that farm, you may get shot. Like, and but these a few people that had just really been fans, just attendees at Cornerstone, were like, well, we kind of feel like we have the bandwidth to make something happen.
Yeah, okay.
And so they started Audiofeed that following summer, the first one without a Cornerstone. And yeah, there's been a lot of overlap and then a lot of difference.
Yeah.
And when I took, so I became in charge of Audiofeed about 4 years ago now. And I think one of the things I've thought a lot about is how Cornerstone sort of served this really unique purpose of helping people that would say they're like identify as part of a Christian subculture to realize that their people existed, that they weren't alone.
Yeah.
So like, you know, in 1987 or something like that, if you listened to like Christian metal, you were probably the only person that you knew that did that. And so there's sort of a, like, they were fulfilling this purpose of like really letting you know that you weren't alone and you could find your people there. I don't think that that's as much of a pressing need as it is or today as it was then. Right. Yeah. We kind of, if you, whatever niche thing you are interested in, you can like be a part of some internet group. Yeah. Like there's a subreddit for you, right? Whatever it is that you like. And so, you know, your people exist already. And I think we are finding that in our cultural moment, there's like this great need for, keeping lines of conversation open across disagreements. Like that's something that's so hard. We're inside of the church, we're sort of discipled away from it. Outside of the church, we're discipled away from it. Like if we don't agree on pineapple on pizza, we can't be friends. And and so I just think like if you're someone in 2025 that thinks it's valuable to genuinely hear from someone that doesn't think exactly what you think, there's not a lot of opportunity for that. And so Audiofeed wants to be a place that you can kind of work that muscle. And I think there's a lot of value in it. Especially myself as like a Christian musician that's making this very overtly Christian music. I love a place like Audiofeed where, there's a mixture of people that both agree and disagree with what I'm singing. That are, there because they want to hear me out. And so I appreciate that. That's why I was willing to step in to keep it going as taking on the leadership role, because it's been such a valuable place to me as an artist.
You know, speaking of your music, I mean, like, if I think about where your music falls kind of on the spectrum of from overt to incognito as far as the messaging, I mean, you do land really far on the overt side to where like your latest album, which we've enjoyed and been listening to it with the kids even, really focuses on concept of Sabbath, which is so niche for the Christian community. You know, I mean, actually it might even have something to say for a Jewish community. I don't know, but I'm not in that. But it's just so niche and it's so overt. Do you find like when you interact with other Christian musicians, or maybe would say like Christian adjacent musicians, do you find that that's kind of unique, or is there a circle of others that are doing what you're doing?
Yeah, there's definitely a circle. Yeah, that circle has felt very small at times, and other times it's felt wider. There's kind of a resurgence of it right now, in a way that I think is cool, but also I don't know if it's my nature to be a little like hesitant about it. Like, I don't know either. Like, any time that, even in our broader culture, like when Jesus starts to feel cool,
yeah,
I'm like, that's, I love that, but also I'm a little skeptical. Like, yeah. I'm like, what's waiting for the shoe to drop? And but yeah, I'd say, yeah, over the years there have been more or less friends that I'm like, yeah, we're both out here kind of singing Bible stories.
Yeah.
Or the verses, yeah, the plenty of friends that are like really serious about their faith, but it doesn't necessarily come, you have to kind of know the language maybe to pick it up in their music. Yeah. Whereas I'm definitely interested in letting you know, this is this thing that happened in the Bible.
And yeah.
You can think what you want about it.
Do you feel like there's pressure for, like, you know, climbing the ladder, so to speak, in the music industry? I don't really know much about how that works, but like, is there pressure? Like, if you want to rise, if you want to go higher, is there pressure to be more vague about the messaging? Or
I feel like honestly, there's pressure in either direction, right? You can do either thing and maybe try to find your people. I'm not one to maybe speak on the music industry. I've basically tried to avoid it. yeah. And to pretty good success. But yeah, I think there's definitely in some circles. Yeah. I remember when I was just starting out in music, it felt like people that were getting a lot of positive attention, who didn't really feel like they had a lot of depth to what they were saying.
Yeah.
But there was this kind of concept of like, increasing our JPMs, you know, if we just
JPM
Jesus is per minute.
Oh.
you know, like if you just had a few more, you know, of like, I don't know, there's an audience that you can produce like a cheap positive reaction by just saying the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, other people that have maybe tried to cross over into the success in like more of the secular music world that are like, oh, let's kind of push this down a little bit. Yeah. And sometimes it's like, yeah, is that marketing or is it like, oh, we're just like, we think we have to do that. We really want our music to be heard by the people that need to hear it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think people maybe deceive themselves into thinking that, in order to achieve that result, they have to kind of dumb down or bury their spirituality.
Yeah.
My experience has been that non-Christians have been very willing to hear me out in my crazy Jesus music.
Yeah. Well, so you said something that probably has set up a wonderment for those who are listening. You said at the start that you've been touring for years, but then you also said you've avoided the music industry. So you may want to, like, could we explain a little bit about what you do? I have a sense of it because you've done it at my house now, but like, what is this thing that you do? How does it work? How do you make connections? What do you do when you arrive? To just kind of give us the picture.
Yeah. So I think of our whole operation as this essentially, like a work in relational ministry. And so,
to be clear, this is apart from audio feed.
This is not audio feed. This is just me. This is me, Kevin Schlereth, the touring musician. I drive around the country and I tend to kind of try to loop back to places a couple times a year, year after year. We play mostly living room concerts to 15-ish people. And we, we're there for getting to know those people, sharing through the music and also just through life together about the goodness of God. And it doesn't really interplay much with the music industry, like seeking out record labels, seeking out streaming numbers, seeking out bigger venues to play. At a certain point early on in my career, I was able to sort of step off of that hamster wheel and say, well, what God really has me doing is like intimate and personal with people. Yeah. And there's a way in which like playing to a 500 cap room makes that work impossible.
Yeah.
And yeah, sure, more people are hearing the words of your music, and there's value in that. But for me, I think even if we play at a house and there's like 40 people there, sometimes I walk away from it thinking, man, I didn't get to talk to any of those people.
Yeah.
You know, it just became too much of a to-do, where like I much prefer it to feel conversational. I'm just one of the people bringing a perspective to the night. You know, hopefully everyone that comes feels like they can bring themselves, and conversations that happen with me are great, but conversations that happen between the other people that might see each other tomorrow, those are even better. So that's kind of the way that we think about it. And we try to do it in this very not capitalistic way, for that's the best way I can think to say it. Like, and that's another issue, you know, if you start to get involved with the industry, not through any sort of evilness, there's just there's more people that are seeking to get paid for what you're doing. And we're seeking to do it in a way that just requires as little money as possible to change hands. And so, yeah, that's kind of led us, you know, I book all of my own shows rather than having an agent who, you know, they would be making 10%. And so will they have me come play at a house for $10? No.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I'm totally willing to do that. I can't do that every night. But I have so much experience in seeing that God's faithful to provide for our needs. Yeah. Like, I don't have to, you know, so we make $0 one night. We make $1,000 the next night or something like that. It's all going to, like, God's going to provide for us on balance. And, it's the more people you get involved, the harder it is to hold the convictions like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I wonder if in the long run, you actually may have more face to face time with more people than a band that does gigs at the medium that are maybe 200 to 300 in a local bar, but they won't play some other venue. But you've actually, I mean, you're doing, it sounds to me like you're doing more events than others kind of in the bracket where you're operating.
I think that's true. And I think there's value to both. You know, there's like, I am one of those that's maybe has a bent towards being skeptical of larger things. Like, I would never make it at a mega church. You know, I think that that's just kind of my nature. But even in that, I want to like acknowledge that cool stuff can happen in those like settings. Yeah, you know, like there have been, I remember doing like an interview a very long time ago, and the interviewer was like, yeah, like he referenced Toby Mac and like was kind of like calling Toby Mac out for and it's like, oh, what Kevin does is important and what you do is wrong. And I'm like, I think they're different things. Yeah. And I'm going to have an impact that he could never have. He's going to have an impact that I could never have. And there's value in both. Like, it's very interesting. Even just the other day, Forrest Frank released those tickets for this big tour. And someone commented on one of the posts about it, and it was like referencing Audio Feed or something like that. If you want to see
Audio Feed's the place to be.
I kind of appreciate like the I appreciate people like trying to stick up for us or something, but it's like, I think like we need to get more comfortable with that kind of diversity in the body. That there's
Did Forrest call you and want a book?
He hasn't done that yet, but I will. Would you answer the call? Oh yeah. If we did Forrest Frank though, we would not tell anyone. It would be like he would play at like next to one of our food trucks, and people would be like,
a little bit of humble pie.
How did I miss that?
Yeah. I mean, so we listen to Forrest mostly with the kids, and I don't know. I mean, like, I listen and I think, man, this guy is very talented. But then juxtaposed to that, I hear these stories of other artists kind of like being rough on him. Like, and I don't really understand the dynamic. I've kind of put it in my head. I want to look into that, but I basically don't have any, it doesn't matter. I just have wondered, like, why do people give Forrest a hard time? I don't know the guy. I don't know anything about him, but...
Yeah, my knowledge is like 2 inches deep, and I have that same question. Like, I, from what I've heard, like, I've been pleasantly surprised with most of the things that have come out of his mouth. Yeah. Like,
I mean, he's another who's very overt with his messaging, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, yeah, there, I guess I understand some people that like are, that, you don't want to feel like you're being duped.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And I think sometimes when someone kind of, has this sort of aw shucks personality like you can feel put on maybe. And I think that's what people are like, maybe wanting to like, in order to avoid that feeling of being tricked, I think they're like wanting to jump to the conclusion and be more cynical.
Yeah.
And
like, is that the same thing that when I was in school, I would see the sports guys, big, strong, good looking, and I would just go ahead and personally reject them before they rejected me.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something like that going on. I think there's like some good measure of, there's like, it's such a big conversation. It's so much bigger than Forrest Frank, right? Like, like what one of my favorite sentences in the Bible is when the guy approaches Jesus and he's like, "Good teacher." And Jesus kind of interrupts him and says, "Well, why do you call me good?" And I think that question of like what constitutes goodness is one that we need like a refresher on inside of like church culture. There's something off, right? And our picture of goodness is eerily similar to the world's picture of goodness. Choose pastors, you know, based on their charisma and sort of propensity for speaking. You know, it's like we want and don't want an egomaniacal pastor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We want and don't want, and like this sort of like, and fame is like that too. Like what makes Forrest Frank good? Well, like, for a lot of people, it's ultimately it's his popularity.
Yeah.
Right. Like, then there, but so you can say, but to reject it because he's popular is kind of insane. Yeah. And yeah, so there's like, there's music under that popularity that is or is not saying something of like profound value about God that is valuable for people to hear. And in the case of Forrest Frank, I think it's, I have not heard anything offensive in his music. I think like it's, and I don't even think it's, sometimes you can commit the crime of being like overly shallow. I don't even think it's that.
Yeah.
Like I think for the most part, it's like, no, this is better than most of what I've heard from CCM.
Yeah. Well, it seems pretty honest, you know? I mean, he seems to be dealing with things that a guy of his age would deal with and then kind of putting it out in front of people.
Yeah.
So I'm not for or against him. I just, it's just been kind of like a question. I have in my mind associated it with Nickelback hate. Do you remember like that was a big thing? And I always wondered if it was because Nickelback's fame grew faster than their authority to hold on to it. You know, like they got very popular very quick. They had a number of hits. And then people were like, I can't remember why they're so popular. And so that the whole thing kind of flipped upside down. And I wonder if it's that. I mean, I have no idea.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. But
yeah, there's like a curse of overexposure or something that like, yeah, people, it's a like, what's it called? Where you like are prone to vote for something else. Because you're just like, you voted for the same thing too many times in a row. I think that's, there's something like that where it's like, oh, okay, well, now I need to be against this thing because I've been for it for too long. Yeah. Or it's like, yeah, in the case of Nickelback, it's really interesting because like he, not only was Nickelback's music everywhere, Chad was also like writing songs for a lot of the other artists that were popular at the time. And so you were always hearing his songs.
Yeah.
And there's a, yeah, there's like a point to which that's great, and then there you get to a point where you're like, it becomes like a, doesn't, yeah, the taste becomes off in your mouth or something. And
I remember him saying that he had developed a certain formula for writing songs that just seemed to work. I was like, what he was touching just was working. And I don't know. Again, I don't know anything about him, but so coming back to your music. So, I had a couple of thoughts as you were talking about just the size of venues, the size of events. And I've thought of, like you mentioned mega churches. I've thought of mega churches as a potential on-ramp for the masses, so to speak. But in my mind, what I hope is, you know, that we don't stay in mega churches. It's a great on-ramp. It's a great place to get in because you can kind of wander in, you know, without being noticed, so to speak.
Sure.
But the hope is that you come into closer community, either in that church in small groups, or like maybe even you go find a smaller community. And I think that's what I felt last night. So to be clear, Kevin did a concert in our living room last night, and that's what it felt like. It felt like this is what you do. This is so my family is musical. A lot of times around the holidays, we pull out instruments and we just make noise, you know? And so it felt, of course, your noise is better than our noise. Your noise is really pretty good.
Well, thank you.
But it just felt like what you do at the family if you happen to be musical. And so, and you talked about that a little bit last night about the value of being face to face. So I'm wondering if you could kind of recreate that moment of just, what are your thoughts on the value of like getting face to face in the digital noise that we have today?
Yeah. I mean, I think I oftentimes at the shows we'll talk about the kind of risk of interacting with a human in real life. Mm-hmm. And that there's sort of, you know, we're so set up as far as receiving entertainment, right? We can always see, hear whatever we want to hear, and that's only going to become more true, right? Like, we're very close to the point where I will just tell AI to make the movie that I want to see, and I will watch that movie, and it's just like instant gratification. But it is also empty gratification, right? Like, and so I think noticing when people are like willing to leave the house, go to where they're going to have to interact with another human being, hear music that won't be the best music they've ever heard, that won't be their favorite music. It might be, but it probably won't be, right? You have access to everything, and you're like choosing to sort of forego that kind of autonomy, and then also to forego this sort of, we live in a very curated society, right? We watch what Netflix tells us to watch. We listen to Forrest Frank because the algorithm says Forrest Frank is what we should listen to.
Yeah.
And those things are accurate, right? They're giving us what we think we want. And so to choose to take in something not algorithmatized, and it's so like risky, but I think there's also like that's where all the reward is as well, that actually being in like we're the most connected society ever, and also the most lonely, right? And so like I think it's an act of courage to give up your temporary happiness, but I think it these experiences in small communities are the things that actually will unlonely us, you know? And I think and even like, it's so encouraging to see like young Gen Zers and Gen Alpha people that are like, I need to not follow this path.
Yeah.
You know, like they're seeing what it's done to the older Gen Z crowd and the younger millennials. Like, and they're like, I don't want that. Yeah. Like I have to. And so it's like cool seeing like high school kids making bands and playing like garage shows and stuff. Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah. They're like, we need to be in the flesh.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting thing. Like I think a lot about the like ways that God designed the universe and the fact that he designed us with bodies. And how so much of our cultural moment is sort of a, like about rejecting your body, yeah, right?
Like, it's almost Gnostic in a way.
Yeah. And it is. And like, you see like studies of like, oh, teens aren't having as much, you know, promiscuous sex, or teens aren't using drugs as much. And it's not because they're coming more moral. They're just like, those things involve your body in an uncomfortable way.
Yeah. They're high risk.
Yeah. And like, you are confronted with the reality of your body. And yeah, I think, but we were made with bodies for a reason. And, I think that's kind of, that's what you experience in this, like, doing things in the flesh.
Yeah. But, it's kind of like, until otherwise notified, just assume that God probably wants us to at least occasionally be together.
You know,
see face to face. Now, I will say, just feedback on the image you just gave. You just gave the image that people are leaving the beauty of Netflix to come be tortured by you in a living room. And that was not the experience. So in case it sounded that way, it actually was a really great experience. I mean, the music is very good. I mean, it is good. You're being very humble, and that's okay. But the music is good. You have it kind of dialed in how to make people comfortable. There was a number of points where people laughed just at, not against you, but at with you. You know, you have a good, you just have a good approach for that. And I'm guessing like some of that is probably won over experience for years, but did you always kind of have that innate sense of it, or did you kind of find that vibe along the way?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's probably come together over time. I'm very uncomfortable as a performer. I shared last night that I kind of had this unexpected conversion experience and then felt called into making music, but I was the last person you'd ever suspect would make music. Mm. I had never played an instrument. I was the kind of person that was like, really hoping you didn't notice I was there, you know, like, I'm pretty sure I didn't speak like a single word in school in eighth grade. Mm. Like, I was just like really struggled with the transition into young adulthood. And, and I still carry that. Like, I officiated a wedding, almost 10 years ago, and just terrified. Like, and I'm like, people are like, you do this every night, but there's I don't want to say that I'm disassociating, but there's like a degree of like, I'm very uncomfortable naturally in that state, but God's like given, enough grace to sort of make it work. But yeah, I think it's, anything that kind of is working, I feel like is, grace of God over like a long time of kind of helping me develop the ability to be there in front of people. But I will say that I think the intention maybe has always been there. Like, I'm someone that's kind of naturally wired to think about like helping different kind of people connect, helping maybe people that feel seen that aren't often seen. It's one of the reasons I think it's worked to play for like blended audiences of Christians and non-Christians so well. Like, I genuinely want to tear down the sort of apprehensions in the room, and like this is kind of a this is a place where it's kind of allowed to wonder what it is you think about this. You know, like, I'm not saying you have to agree with me. I'm also challenging you to not just lean on the idea of what you think you've always believed about it. Like, my previous record was called Lenten Songs, and it's all about grief. We had a really challenging couple of years. My sister-in-law was diagnosed and passed away from a terminal cancer. Mm. And so I wrote this album kind of about the grieving process, and then also noticing the way that the disciples of Jesus lived a similar experience, right? Yeah. That in some manner of speaking, Jesus had this terminal diagnosis, and his friends had to do stuff with him knowing that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the album talks a lot about that, like, oh, well, what was it like at the Last Supper when they're finished, they sing a hymn.
Yeah.
Like, how could you possibly sing a song at that time? You know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And so I'm just singing these songs about this stuff and like getting to hear from people that are like, oh, first of all, you know, I'm a total pagan, hate everything about Christianity. But tell me more about Jesus and his friends. Like, they, you know, like just feeling that permission to actually consider the humanity of the disciples, like not go on what you think you know. And so I think that's all about creating that kind of comfort. Yeah. And I think, you know, I truly, there's not any part of me that thinks, you know, I'm up on the stage and important, and the people not singing songs are unimportant. Yeah. Like, that's a curse that some artists carry. I don't particularly have that curse. And so I think that helps, you know. I'm just as interested in what you have to say as you are in what I have to say. And I think, I hope people feel that.
Yeah. You know, so I think part of what, so I've seen you do a living room concert, and I've seen you do a show at Audio Feed. And at Audio Feed, what you did was basically make a living room in the middle of the thing. You know, you didn't go up on stage. You came down and had people come around you. And I think my words to you after that was that you created a mood or something. It just was like, it's different. It's not, it didn't feel like a performance. It felt like a buddy who's showing us his latest songs that he's put together. But to me, a huge part of the value is actually what you're saying between the songs, because the songs themselves, someone could piece together, you know, the concept, but it's hearing how you talk about this thing that you're interested in that I think has the magnetism to it. And so the way that I'm thinking of it is like, if I were to hear two physicists talking passionately about some physical property or something that they discovered, I may not know what they are talking about, but I want to hear more about that. I want to live in their passion for a moment. And so what you did last night, at least, was not preaching to anybody. You weren't telling anybody what to think. You were just sharing, like, this is just something. It happened to be about Sabbath and rest. And it's like, you're sharing some passion that you have. And it's not, it's like, you're not pointing that at people. It's more like, I'm going to point over here, and if y'all want to come with me, you can, you know, it's that sort of thing. And it's really different than, is sort of a Christian guru on a stage at a megachurch giving a sermon. It's not what it is. It's more like, you know, let's just step this thing out together. And, it was really nice. It was, now I think with our group, we probably were all believers, I would guess. But like, how do you see that happening when you're with a group that's, you know, maybe ex-Christians, or just, they're just not there right now?
Yeah.
What do those conversations usually wind up being like? Do they come find you afterward and discuss with you, or how does that go?
Yeah, I think that's maybe the most common thing. Occasionally there'll be like some commentary, some back and forth, mid performance.
Oh, really? Is it ever aggressive?
No, I don't think so. There's one time in 15 years that I can think of something kind of aggressive happening. And, I don't know.
It's a pretty good track record.
Yeah.
15 years. And
I think that, you know, I really just hear, you know, Jesus' words and like the parable of the sower. And it's so interesting. I feel like, I've heard the parable of the sower preached a fair amount of times, and there's always kind of like, it's almost like the emphasis is on figuring out how to be the good soil.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm like, soil has no capacity to change itself. Yeah. The farmer fixes the soil. And the sower sows indiscriminately.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the beauty of it. Jesus is saying, your job is just to not worry about where the seed's landing. Yeah. Yeah, you're just casting it around and saying, this is the truth. That's the extent of what, like, I feel like I need to do.
Yeah.
And that is so liberating in terms of, I'm not saying, oh, who's the bad soil? What do I do? Not give them the seed? Do I have to change them?
Yeah.
Like, God will do what God will do. And so often, I think, you know, and as is illustrated in the parable, you sort of, in many cases, you kind of, it appears like the soil's fine until it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so just like not fixating on that. I think people respond to that. They can sense that all I'm doing is throwing the seed around.
Yeah.
Like whether or not it takes root is not. I know it's not a function of me. I also would offer that I don't think it's a function of them. Like, I think it's a function of God.
Yeah.
And I think that's really helpful. But a lot of conversations, like I mentioned the one before about, hey, I disagree with you entirely, but tell me a little bit more. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. The most uncomfortable sort of during a show interruption, I have a song from that Lenten Songs album that it kind of ends with the idea. The disciples basically, imagining them sort of worrying that Jesus is going to die before he like successfully hands off the inheritance to them. And Jesus saying,
that's interesting. I never
And then, but then Jesus offering that no one dies before their time.
Yeah.
And so I'm singing no one dies before their time. And I finish the song. And this, like, I don't know, 13-year-old girl is just like, what about stillbirth?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, just walk off stage. Yeah. it was such a genuine and fair question. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I think that's really hard. I don't think that makes what I'm saying untrue.
Yeah.
But I think, and I, what I told her was like, God is a God that wants those questions.
Yeah.
Like, don't ever be afraid to ask them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what a model for probably how we ought to be creating spaces in church where people can ask those questions.
Yeah.
Because the fact that she could ask in a living room, you know, at a concert, that means you're creating that environment where she can. And so many people, I think, have kind of run aground and left the faith basically because they felt like they had these questions that were hitting this brick wall.
Yeah.
You know, and like if I ask questions, you know, of my church leaders, if they don't have the answer, it embarrasses them and they don't want those questions to come. And so like it's such an important thing to create a space for you know, for those questions. Speaking of young people, I did want to have you say at least something about the image we may be giving is that Kevin wanders around the country on his own, but he is not alone when he is traveling. Tell us about who your traveling partners are.
Yeah, yeah. Don't believe that when I say we, I somehow think of myself as multiple people. So I travel around with my wife. We've been married for a long time, 22 and a half years. And we have four children. Our oldest just went off the road with us. He started college. His name is Kevin. He is a computer science major at a university in Wisconsin. And then our three youngest still travel with us. Madeline is 16, and I have Ebenezer, 8, and Eustace, 6. And so we drive around, do car schooling, and they're a big part of what we're doing, especially my wife. The kids are sort of, you know, they have to be there. We want them to feel like considered in the things we do, but not required to be included in the things we do.
Yeah.
That's a kind of an interesting line to walk. But so much. I feel like my wife is like the, in a lot of ways, the, she's like the better friend, you know, like, I can talk about like the, philosophical stuff all day. And then Jess is there actually like getting in the weeds of people's life a lot more, frequently and, skillfully than maybe I do. I can be a little robotic or something. And so she's very compassionate and, yeah, we're a good 1-2 punch of just getting, So, when we go around and like we are deepening these friendships, she's like a really good listener.
Well, and I noticed when you guys arrived here, we probably met the rest of your family at Audio Feed, but I couldn't quite remember. But it didn't matter because you walked in and it's just like, we're friends, you know, that I'm guessing that takes practice on the road to get to where, or maybe you guys are just born that way, but like, did it take a while to get to where when you're with new people every day or almost every day that you're having to kind of find ways to recharge your emotional batteries?
I don't see it that way. I think of it more as like an equipping, like I sense that we've been given this sort of spiritual energy for the work that we do. It's actually what led me to the kind of, it was one of the starting points for the sort of Sabbath Rest record. It's sort of like, how are we doing this?
Like
we've traveled with other people, other bands, other families, and they just like kind of burn out. They think it's what they just wanted to do most of all. Whereas all of us are like, this is not what we want to do most of all by nature. Like we want to do it most of all because it's clear that it's where God has us. But I think like, we're just marvel at the way that God like makes it that we have what we need. And like, it's easy to talk about that with our like physical needs, but I think even more so with the emotional needs of it that, I feel like we have like a special grace to, the energy or whatever. People are like, are you an introvert or an extrovert? And I was like, I don't think so.
Neither.
I feel like I have what I need to literally talk to people for, 18 hours a day. And then, when COVID stuff happened, we were at, and with my sister-in-law's cancer, we, for the better part of 18 months, we saw no one except our immediate family. And I was like, this is great. I could do this. I could never stop being alone. And I think that kind of, there's like a spiritual contentment that I've it sounds like, I don't mean it like in a braggadocious way, like, I marvel at this gift that God's given me that I'm like, how am I like this? It's a far cry from, the 15-year-old me that just the thought of even someone hearing my voice was like unbearable, So I don't think I like worked at it either. I just think it's like been given to us. And we certainly need it. We couldn't do what we do if we didn't have this sort of special grace to, be up for the, all the conversations and all the meeting people and even all the receiving hospitality. Like, it's an awkward thing to receive hospitality. And, like, it's something that we, I've been made to feel comforted in by God, I think. Yeah. Like, so.
I feel you in that. We, you know, so in our ministry, we're support based, although we're not going out and seeing the people that are giving to us face to face very much. Yeah. We occasionally do, but it took a few years for us to just kind of, I mean, Krista grew up, her dad was support based. Yeah. And so she was more familiar with it. But like for me, you know, it was uncomfortable. And I realized, I think that's pride actually. Like, yeah. I'm the man, sure. And I'm going to, you know, but
yeah,
it's like, no, it's healthy for us to be able to accept. One of the guys that was there last night, named Billy, within our church, he said that it's really easy for all of us to go help someone else on their house, but we need to also be good at asking for help on our own house.
Yeah.
You know? And because he's thinking about, like, because we transitioned from being basically a living room home church to now renting space, and we're all kind of sensing it feels different now, you yeah. know? And part of it is we're not in each other's homes. When they were meeting at our house, they saw that, oh, you guys could use a fence. Let's build a fence. And we did one Sunday.
Yeah.
Like somebody showed up with a bunch of pallets and we just built it. And so being removed from our living space, we kind of wind up in a situation where we're not seeing each other's needs as much.
Yeah.
And so then we have to do the difficult thing of asking, which is usually the hurdle.
Yeah.
If you're in my house and you see my windows broken, you'll help me figure it out.
Sure. Yeah.
But if I have to come to church and during prayer request time say, I need help with my window, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So, hey, I thought maybe we could have you play a few songs.
This song is called Bees. It was the first song for the record, really. The record's called Settle In. It's about rest. And this is a song about the work that bees do. So it comes at the beginning of the album, and it's meant to sort of jostle you because you're getting ready for an album about rest and hearing a song about work.
Bees everywhere, they're working for their kingdom. They grow not tired nor weary, their efforts fruit is sweetness. Oh, to be at work for your kingdom and make life sweet for my neighbors. And oh, to spread your pollen, to see your blooms and blossoms, to share with them your sweetness. They'll taste and see your goodness. Oh, to be at work for your kingdom and make life sweet for the people around me. Oh, to be at work for your kingdom and make life sweet. My neighbors. We waste so much time picking these fights, assuming we're right, so stingers and die. So this is war and all of our hate. This life is worth more when we make something sweet. At work for your kingdom and make life sweet for the people around me. To be at work for your kingdom and make life sweet for my neighbors.
I'm going to try this song. I think it's called For the Weary. Yeah, and it kind of continues into that theming of rest and work. It's sort of the eventual answer maybe to that question that comes later in the album. Jesus in Matthew 11:28 invites us to rest. If we're weary, if we're burdened with burdens, we can come to him for rest. And then he says that his yoke is easy. And, you know, a yoke is an implement of work. And so the song is thinking about how can Jesus offer us rest in the sort of context of work.
Give you rest can be heard as a threat by the wise who are learning, have hardened hearts set. And lay your burdens down. All the weight you're carrying can be relieved if you'd just call it unbelief and come to me. 'Cause my yoke isn't hard. I'll give you everything you need to do the words that I have written on your heart.
Respect for like worship leaders and stuff like that sing in the morning. Nighttime is the right time for singing, but this is great. It's yeah, my daughter is getting into musical theater, and so she's like been doing some kind of, you know, vocal warm-ups, and I'm like, oh, I should have had a vocal warm-up. My vocal warm-up is talking all day. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So,
was fun. I think I'm going to play this song for the last one. It's called Little Branch. It's a fun song. It's like a very Unlike Me song. I actually, was kind of, I demoed out a bunch of potential songs for the record and shared it with some friends. And then, sat with the songs for a while, and I had kind of gotten to the point where I was going to throw this one away. It's like, that doesn't really sound like me. It's a little different. I don't know. And I was traveling around and ran into my friend Jacob, and he's like, I like those demos. Yeah. My favorite one was Little Branch. I was like, oh, shoot. I would do anything for Jacob, so I had to pick this song out of the trash can. But it's really special to me, like, lyrically. It was always one that I liked a lot. I just felt self-conscious about it musically. But yeah, I think if the album, it's called Settle In, which is really because of this Hebrew word nuach, which means to rest or to settle in, and it is the word that is used when God places man in the garden. And so kind of as I delve deeper into Sabbath rest, the more I really started to identify God's resting on the seventh day as this sort of commemoration, this celebration of the state of the created order at that point, and understanding redemption as God's design and plan to bring us back to this place of communion with him and co-laboring with him in his garden. And Jesus says that he's the vine and we are the branches. And I think that's kind of ultimately another way to say the same thing. And so there's something so restful about being where you're made to be. Depending on how this gets cut together, kind of like when we're talking about having kind of the bandwidth to be extra introverted or whatever, to have all these conversations all the time. I think that my working theory is that I'm resting in this because I'm where I was made to be, and God is generous. And so often in my Christian context, I think, I just feel like people feel really burdened with sort of what they think is required of them inside of the faith. And I think that with this song especially, I want to offer that kind of God's the one doing the work, that God is the one giving you, he's filling your cup, right? And so you're just pouring out from what he's filling. And sometimes we need to be honest with ourselves and like that we're not following through and pouring that out. Yeah, but I think a lot of the times people are just sort of like someone else is telling them that they should have more to pour. And I think God's the one that's giving you what you have. So I think, working, the work we do with him under his yoke is restful for that reason. So settle in, little branch. Make your home among the vine, grafted in, bear much fruit, produced by the vine supply. And if you ever start to wonder how you measure up, just know that it's the Lord who fills your cup. The Lord is your supply, your very source of life. When troubles come, know you will want for not. The Lord is your supply.
So settle in, little branch, and make your home among the vine, grafted in bear much fruit, produced by the vine supply. And if you ever start to wonder how you measure up, just know that it's the Lord who fills your cup. It is the Lord that prunes, completes his work in you. It pleases him that you would bear much fruit. It is the Lord that prunes. Oh, settle in, little branch, and make your home among the vine, grafted in, bear much fruit, produced by the vine supply. And if you ever start to wonder how you measure up, just know that it's the Lord who fills your cup. The Lord, he calls you friend and keeps his covenant. Complete your joy that you might love like him. The Lord, he calls you friend. Oh, what a God he is, that we might rest in him.
We did it. Kevin, tell us how listeners can get a hold of your music, how they might support your ministry, help you guys on tour. Tell us a little bit about those connection points.
You can listen to my music anywhere you listen to music. If you can spell Kevin Shalareth,
I don't know if we can.
You may
want to spell it. Yeah. You'll look at the title of this podcast. You'll see his name spelled.
And it'll work. If you just Google that or type it into whatever, if you do Spotify, whatever it is that you use, I'm there. As far as supporting us or finding out about tour dates, sometimes I keep up with bands in town, which will publish the concerts to Spotify events. But oftentimes, your best bet is to follow me on Instagram or go to my website. And my website is nottheminion.com. That's real. Sorry, it's nottheminion.com. I wanted to delineate between myself and Kevin the Minion. On Instagram, I'll post tour posters and things like that. And that's probably the best, most consistent way. If you want to just give me a bunch of money or even a small amount of money on a regular basis, we're on Patreon, which is a ongoing funding platform. So you can give as little as $1 a month, or I don't know what the max is. I think I answered all the questions. I have a Substack, and I don't know how to tell you to get there. Substack, search Kevin Shalareth. And that is something I utilize as an email list to just send you very infrequent emails about our comings and goings.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. This has been a lot of fun. And if you want to find him, but you struggled to find him, send me a message and I'll get you connected. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks so much.